Hi, I'm Ruthie, and I have a recorder.
Stick them up.
Listen to Out There on Wednesdays, 4 to 5 p.m. here on Valley Free Radio for interviews and snippets of life from the paths and streets of Northampton. You can hear past editions of Out There archived at weatherbeard.com/out there. And it is Wednesday, May 2nd. Live in the studio today, that talk of computers, the PSA about Forbes Library computers and Yes computers, reminds me of a few weeks ago. I was in Knoxville, Tennessee, in the library. I was traveling, and so I stopped in the library because they got internet and they have a phone you can use. Anyway, but I was looking around at the computers, and there were actually a lot of available computers, and I was thinking about how I used to when I would go to a library. All the computers would always be full, and there'd always be lines for computers, but now it's like people have their little, like, cell phone device things where they're checking internet on, so it's just kind of a shift to see these library computers go unused. It makes me think about, you know, technology and the investment in a certain technology, and then things going obsolete or whatever. But anyway, thanks for tuning in to Out There today. It's 4:03 according to the studio clock. Today's show, what'll I do? The new piece I have today is this morning I was doing my Pedal People route, biking through town, and on North Street I saw a group of about, I don't know, 75 to 100 children and adults walking down North Street with some of the adults had like bright vests, crossing guard kind of vests. And so I pulled up, I dropped my trailer, and I caught up to the last person in line, who happened to be Howard Moore. And I have a little interview with him about the walking school bus that was on their way to Bridge Street School this morning. Also, for today's show, I was traveling most of the last month. Not really traveling. I went to Kentucky to see my family, spend some time with my parents. I've realized on this last trip that when I say that I'm spending some time with my parents because, you know, they're getting older and they need some more help around the house, like some people don't really, when I give it a label, when I say, well, my mom has dementia, then people say, oh, now I understand. Anyway, it was a interesting trip, and I'll probably be going back again soon. So that also reminds me that there will be a new show, I think, hopefully, alternating this Wednesday slot with me starting next week. It's called Energy Matters. It's about alternative health and healing. I have to look up the details on that, which I'll mention that at the end of the show as well. I want to check out that email and the name of the person who's doing that because I forget right now. Where was I? Anyway, so for today's show, I got to think about the walking school bus, and then I also have recorded some talks, events in Knoxville, Tennessee when I was there. About a month ago, 6 weeks ago, I sat on my recorder. I must have sat on it. I don't know. Somehow I broke it. And so I didn't have a recorder that I was fond of for the last like 6 weeks. So I kind of fell out of the habit of chasing people down to put a recorder in their face. And so when I ran after the walking school bus today, that was like the first time in like 6 weeks that I've chased someone down to say, hey, can I interview you? And, I haven't quite got my new recorder set up right. Basically, I don't have a dirty sock tied around the microphones to act as a windscreen. So there's a bunch of windscreen background noise in this interview. Anyway, so I got the interview with Howard Moore. And then the Tennessee stuff, I went to a church in Knoxville called, it's Church of Our Savior. It's a United Church of Christ church. And the sermon for the day, or the talk, I don't know if they call them sermons. Anyway, the talk was all about like white privilege. They had a bunch of people in the church have been part of this study group, studying this curriculum that some leaders, black and white, of the UCC, of the denomination, had gotten together. And so there was sort of like a, well, that was the focus of this talk. And yeah, that's most of it. Today's show, I believe. I might play a song or two. I might have a story or two. Oh, I have another story, come to think of it, from today. I was doing my pedal people route and I was at the transfer center and I had just unloaded my bike and trailer and I was starting to ride away. And the way the transfer center is, the parking area, it's just like a line of cars that park like side by side by side. And there's a, it's a slight slope down, forward, down, and then you have to like do a right angle turn to the left to pull out. If you were to keep on going straight, like, you know, like, I don't know, 20, 15 yards, there's like a chain link fence and then a sharp drop off down to the busy Route 9 road. Anyway, so I was pulling out. It's funny because, oh, well, I should leave out these details about being hungry and excitement about the frozen bananas I just found, which I didn't eat because I was like, oh, let me get home and eat those. And I'm glad I didn't pull them out to eat them. I'm glad I had both hands on the handlebars. Because what happened as I was pulling out was I saw this pickup truck that started, it had been parked. The guy had been unloading and he was starting to get back in his truck or he was near it. And then I thought he was pulling out. The truck started, you know, coming, drifting down. And I thought he was going to turn, but then I realized, wait a minute, he's not even in that truck. He's still trying to get in that truck. And the truck was just going straight. Like the steering was locked. The motor wasn't on. It was just drifting straight ahead towards the chain link fence and the drop off. And the guy, the driver is like frantically trying to open the door. He got the door open and he was like reaching around inside. And this all happened in like 4 seconds, 5 seconds, three, I don't know, 3 seconds. Hard to calculate time. And I saw another guy that, as the driver was trying to reach inside, then another guy who had been there at the transfer center, like, ran and tried to grab hold of one side of the back of the truck. And I dropped my bike and trailer and grabbed hold of the other side of the back of the truck. But the truck seemed to be picking up speed as it headed towards the chain link fence and the drop-off. And I kind of thought, like, in that instant, my thought was, if enough people grab hold of this truck, we can stop it. And then like the driver, well, he was trying to be the driver guy. He was like half in the truck and half out of the truck, trying to kind of sort of getting dragged. And then he finally, he was able to, I don't know, maybe grab the emergency brake or something. But finally the truck like jolted to a stop. Like I looked like literally like a foot and a half, like 2 feet from the chain link fence and the drop off. And it like jolted to a stop and the driver kind of like, he was getting half dragged, kind of jolted to a stop. And it's like, are you okay? And he was okay, of course. Pretty, we were all kind of had a big adrenaline rush, let's say. He said, yeah, it slipped out of gear. It's never done this. It just slipped out of gear and started rolling. Anyway, so there's three morals to that story. One is, I guess it's, I think, like, use the emergency brake. The other is, if enough people get together to do something, then they can maybe have a little bit of an influence. And then the third thing is, Ruthie, don't try and eat frozen bananas while you're riding your bike. Keep your eyes on the wheel, handlebars, where are you going, and look alert, look alert. Okay, here we have the walking school bus from today, May 2nd, 2018, in Northampton.
My name's Howard Moore. I'm a walking school bus driver. I'm on the school committee. And we've been doing this walking school bus since last fall. But today is an attempt to sort of bring new life to it. So we made it an event, you know, and had snacks and things at the beginning. And we have it's now beginning at the Sheldon Field parking lot. So that hopefully parents who, you know, are currently driving and dropping their kids off at the school might instead drop their kids off at the Sheldon Field parking lot, and then their kids can walk to school from there.
So it's been happening like every day, or how often?
So it goes every morning.
Okay, what time does it leave Sheldon Field?
It leaves Sheldon Field at 8:10.
Okay. How many kids have been participating in, for, well, like through the winter?
Through the winter, we had about half a dozen kids.
That's cool. And like how many adults, or how many school bus drivers, walking school bus drivers?
We have about half a dozen walking school bus drivers. We always have two.
Mm-hmm. So today is what, May 2nd? Is this like all week or just like today that you put a lot of effort into getting a bunch of people or what?
Well, so this continues every single morning at 8:10 at Sheldon Field. And then walking up Day Avenue and down North Street. Uh-huh. And then here down Parsons to Bridge Street School. Uh-huh. So that's going to be every single day now for the rest of the spring. There's a schedule. It's online. If you go to the Bridge Street School PTO website, They have a little schedule and a little map that shows that and has little biographies of the school bus drivers.
Oh, cool.
So yes, it will be every day. There won't be snacks every day. This is the only day with snacks.
Okay. Nice. Do you have a kid at Bridge Street, or how did you...
Well, so I've had four children who went to Bridge Street School, but right now I'm on the school committee.
Yeah, okay.
And so that's how I was in the loop and knew that this was something that people were doing.
Okay.
And that's why I became a school bus driver last fall, was because I really think, you know, it'd be good to have more people walk for a whole lot of reasons.
Yeah, why don't you talk about some of those reasons? I'm sure you'd be glad to, right?
Sure. Well, one of the reasons is this: what we're doing right now is we're talking about stuff. You know, people don't often just have enough conversations in life.
Uh-huh.
You know, people tend. It seems like we spend an awful lot of time with our head down doing our jobs, and not spending maybe as much time as we ought to just conversing. And so that's one real benefit, I think, of this. For everybody, for, you know, the adults who do it and for the children who do it. And then obviously there's the sort of what it doesn't cost. So if somebody's walking, it means they're probably not getting a ride in a car, which is a good thing in terms of, you know, the space and the pollution that cars take up and create. And so that's a positive if you're walking instead of driving. It's obviously there's some fitness and some mental health benefits from walking and being out in the world. And I think that's another piece of it. It's just, you know, when you're walking, you know, you're much more aware of the world as opposed to being in a completely controlled environment. So those are all good things.
Like that giant hole we just walked by that the city's...
For example.
Sewer Great Hole. I was like 2 feet away and this giant dark hole. Never would have seen that driving by in a car.
Exactly. There's a lot you just see. Yeah, you know, and it sort of makes you more aware of all those little things. You know, the trash that people probably thoughtlessly have left around. You know, you discover.
Is it right that the schools don't provide school buses if you live within a mile of school in Northampton?
That's right. The legal requirement from the state is 2 miles.
2 miles.
Okay. The city provides it within a mile and a half. So if it's not required, then it's there's a fee to pay the schools for it. Uh-huh.
How many people would you estimate are walking together today, this morning?
Well, I don't know. How many would you estimate? This is a pretty big crowd here.
100?
Yeah, let's say that many, but I think it's probably less. I don't know. I didn't count. Some of them were already there. So we're going to be able to lose our count here. I don't know.
All right, 75 at least, I'd say.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. Right, so people can join up till the end of the year. When does school get out?
I don't actually know the date. It's the end of June. But, you know, it's the end of June.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't really have to join. There's nothing formal. You can just come walk with us because, you know, it's, well, these are public sidewalks.
Yeah. Can you just say the start time and location again?
Yeah, so it's 8:10, leaving Sheldon Field at 8:10, and there will probably be some people there sort of getting ready to leave around, you know, 8 o'clock. And then we'll leave at 8:10 and arrive at Bridge Street School, you know, 8:35. And again, go to the PTO website. I think it's BSSPTO is the website. And it's got the walking school bus tab. You click on it, and it would give you the schedule. So if you, instead of coming at 8:10 at Bridge Street School, if you were somewhere along Day Avenue or North Street, you can see what time we're supposed to be at each place.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks. Do you normally walk to school?
Yeah.
Yeah? Are you normally part of this walking school bus?
No.
So you just normally walk, like, by yourself or with caregivers? Or
with my mom.
With your mom. All right. How do you like walking with a big group today?
Good.
There was another interview that I got my clips. I lost the clips. It was like a brief one with Leah Gregg, who walks to school, has been walking to school all winter with her son Jacob, and said that one of the real benefits of walking to school for her son and other kids is that it gets them out. You know, it's just like it's a healthy thing to do instead of sitting in a car and then sitting in a classroom. So it's better for their brains. All right, so you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. The interview is with Howard Moore, walking school bus driver, walker, from Northampton. And, oh yeah, I'm going to play a song. So this song came into my mind because right after I saw the walking school bus people, then I was continuing my route down Cherry Street. And it's very often on Wednesdays when I'm doing this Cherry Street route that I'm coming down the street one way and my coworker Ben Winter is coming up the street the other way because we both have pickups on this street. And this Diamond Rio song came to mind. Also maybe because Ben's got some Georgia roots.
It was 700 fence posts from your place to ours. Neither one of us was old enough to drive a car. Sometimes it was raining, sometimes it would shine. We wore out that gravel road between your house and mine. I'd start walking your way, you'd start walking mine. We'd meet in the middle, meet that old Georgia pine. We'd gain a lot of ground, cause we both give a little. Ain't no road too long, we meet in the middle. It's been 7 years tomorrow since we set our vows. Under that old pine tree, you ought to see it now. Standing in the backyard, reminding me and you that if we don't see eye to eye, there's something we can do. I'd start walking your way, you'd start walking mine. We'd meet in the middle, meet that old Georgia pine. We gain a lot of ground, cause we both give a little. Ain't no road too long, we meet. You start walking mine. We meet in the middle, meet that old Georgia pine. We gain a lot of ground, cause we both give a little. Ain't no road too long when we meet in the middle. Oh, I'd start walking your way, you start walking mine. We meet in the middle, meet that old Georgia pine. We gain a lot of ground, cause we both give a little. Ain't no road too long when we meet in the middle. I'd start walking your way, you'd start walking mine. We meet in the middle.
All right, so the next thing I have is I'm going to play the sermon thing from Church of the Savior, United Church of Christ in Knoxville, Tennessee. I went to church there, maybe it was 3 weeks ago, I don't recall. And the speaker is Bill Morrow, and yeah, I'm sorry, I forget what he was involved in, but really good work. He's been like a longtime activist in Knoxville, Tennessee. And you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJ, 103.3 FM in Northampton, and streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. Oh, and thanks to all the people who donated for Fun Drive last week. And if you didn't remember to donate or get a chance to donate last week, you can donate now. You can call 585-1033, and I will take your pledge. Or you can donate online, valleyfreeradio.org, and keep this community resource on the air. Okay, here's Bill Morrow from Knoxville, Tennessee.
I'm just curious, how many people here, I want you to raise your hand so get ready for this, have ever helped raise money for a good cause, for maybe people or an individual or organization that was a low income or what we might call underprivileged? Anybody, raise your hand. Almost everybody here, right? Thank you for that. I want to give an oversimplified, I want to give a lot of oversimplified comments today because I have such a short period of time, so please bear with me. But I want to give an oversimplified version of how we often approach fundraising. We often approach raising money for a particular population, trying to demonstrate the tremendous needs of this population. Okay? If any of you have ever written a proposal or some kind of a program, social program, you know that at the first of that proposal, it's often there's the needs and problem statement. So we're supposed to look at this particular community. Let's say we're working out of a community center in Lonsdale. We're trying to get our program funded in Lonsdale in competition with programs in other cities, okay? So what we really need to do here in the problems and needs statement is we need to show that the people in Lonsdale are worse off than anybody in Chicago or Los Angeles or New York. Our folks are totally destitute, okay? I mean, they've got more washing machines on the porch, more cars up on blocks, more diabetes, more blindness, more girls under the age of 3 are pregnant, more guys under the age of 17 have had an AK-47 bullet go through their mouth. We've got more fleas, more ticks, more everything. Our people, this is how we start. Our people are worse off than anybody else. Give us the money. Okay? The more we focus on how bad off our particular population is, the better chance we have to get funding. We're not looking for assets, and that's not in the first part of the proposal. We're looking at the needs and problems of people. That's our perspective. And so we're looking for needs. And of course, the main need we're trying to demonstrate is the need for, well, me. They need me. So give me the money. Okay? So let's assume now that we got the funding and we're going to a community meeting. So we're going to this community meeting and we're going to explain our services. We say, well, we've been to Lonsdale and we've documented all these needs of Lonsdale that I mentioned earlier. You know, the pregnant girls under 3, etc. And so, as a result, we've developed these programs. So I have a brochure about these programs. We have all these resources for Lonsdale. Okay? I have resources, you have needs. I have stuff, you don't. I am rich, you're poor. Let's build a relationship based on that. I'm rich, you're poor, let's be friends. This is the way that you and I know I'm taking a big leap to say how you have been socialized, but guess what? You have been socialized in the same world I have been socialized in. This is the way that you and I have been socialized, is to see vast communities of people as bundles of needs and to see us as the the main need that they have. Our programs, our reason. We're rich, you're poor, let's be friends. We are socialized to ignore the wealth and history of communities of color. We are blind to the ways that a racist system depends on our ignorance and our inability to empathize with others. Let me share an aha moment with you that has happened in my life. I'm from a notorious southern town. I'm from Scottsboro, Alabama. You can go Google it, you'll get a million hits. There was a case in the 1930s where the white people of my town, long before I was born, tried to kill legally 9 African-American youth for something they didn't do. So this case, they would have been dead except for the role of the Communist Party and the NAACP, who took that case and raised it to a very high visibility, not only in this country, but internationally. I once went to the Museum of Modern Art in New York and saw a poster in Russian. Now, I wonder what that says. And I read the little fine print underneath, and it said, "Free the Scottsboro Boys." People in Russia were having demonstrations to free the Scottsboro Boys. People in Sweden were having demonstrations to free the Scottsboro Boys. And people in Harlem were. When I was growing up in the 50s, only 20 years later, nobody knew anything about the Scottsboro case. I only heard of it one time from the time I went to college. My sister went to college and never heard of the Scottsboro case, even though this international case was named for our hometown because it happened there. It was as if it had just vanished into the ether. As a young adult, I began to read about that case. And at first, I was irate about what happened to these young men. And as I read more, I began to understand how much it happened to many young men and people of color like them. But then later, I began to get another kind of understanding that the racist system was not only rooted in brutality against the African-American community, but it depended on me not knowing my own history and what was happening around me in my own world. That it wasn't just based on ignorance, but it was also based on my callousness. That there was a callous being produced and created over my very soul. The racist system depended on oppression of people of color and ignorance of people like me. I began to realize that I needed to try to undo this racist system, not just because what had happened to other people, which was brutal, but also because of what had happened to me. That I too had been affected. Now, let me be clear. I'm in no way indicating or implying that what happened to me, the way I was affected, was somehow comparable to what happened to people in the African-American communities across this country. But what I am saying, it is critical for us as white people to understand that what living in a racist system has done to us. You didn't grow up in Scottsboro, Alabama. I did. But you may be from Minnesota, where there are about 20 towns that did not allow black people to live in. You may have grown up or lived in California, where there were 113 sundown towns where black people were not allowed to live or spend the night. Or maybe in Ohio, where there were 135. Or maybe in Illinois, where there was more than 500. Or maybe somewhere across the West and North, where there were between 3,000 and 15,000 communities where African Americans were not allowed to live. You know that story about your state? No. You were kept ignorant, just like I was kept ignorant about what was happening in Scottsboro. I remember a cartoon. I used to like the Far Side cartoons. You know, Gary Larson, they're kind of quirky, but I like them, all right? So there was one cartoon where over on the side over here, they're just this group of lions, and they're just absolutely devouring the zebra. Okay, it's kind of gross, but okay, they're over just eating the zebra up. Over here on the trail, there's the lead zebra, and he's telling the other zebra, keep going, just keep moving. There's nothing here to see. Just keep going. No, nothing here to see. Our racist system is sort of like that. Nothing here to see, folks. Just keep moving. There's nothing to see about discrimination in housing, in medical care, in education, in the judicial system, in the policing system. Just keep moving, keep moving. Anyway, wasn't it the zebra's fault? Too slow? Too dumb? I think his stripes went black and white instead of white and black, as they should have been. For this racist system to work, it depends on you and me being ignorant of our history and desensitized to the pain of others. So that is what has been done to you. How do you feel about it? So how do we try to get started to get out of this trap?
I'm going to take a break. I have another 10 minutes of this talk. Are you listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio? You're listening to a talk by Bill Morrow from our Church of the Savior in Knoxville, Tennessee, where I was a few weeks ago. This is Valley Free Radio. I want to make some announcements. Let's see, like right now, Wednesday, May 2nd from 4:30 to 7 o'clock at Smith College. Smith College's Amnesty International chapter is having an event where you can drop in at their fundraiser for Syria, Palestine, Rohingya. We will be sending petitions and letters to concerned organizations and political groups and would love signatures to show support. That's at Chapin Deck, Smith College, today from 4:30 to 7. And the quote on the flyer that I saw that I really like, it's better to light a candle than to curse the darkness. What else? Another upcoming events, Higher Help Band, that's Sylvia and Jerry Johnson and others, are playing at Sam's Pizza May 12th and May 26th. That's in downtown Northampton. Any other announcements? There will be more announcements later. So, what is it? 4:34? Okay. I'm going to play it's another 10 minutes of this talk by Bill Morrow. Thanks for listening to Out There today.
So how do we try to get started to get out of this trap? So I want to tell a story about an awareness that I was given by a middle school student in East Knoxville. Lance would ride with us to different events. And he would say, hey, Bill, blow the horn. He would hang out the window. He'd wave at somebody. He said, that's my cousin. Well, we'd go down the street a little while longer. And, hey, Bill, blow the horn. That's my other cousin. Blow the horn. That's my cousin. Blow the horn. That's my cousin. I'm thinking, man. Okay. Is this your mother's brother's or sister's child? Is it your dad's brother's? Is it your mother's brother's child's child? I mean, how? Lance looked at me like I didn't know what I was talking about. He said, no. He said, that's my cousin because when I was a boy, I would go to my grandmother's house and she lived next door and we played together. Now, my friend Cynthia Miller, who you know, Sarah, legal aid, said that they called it their play cousin. Okay. Now, this I've told this story a number of times and where there were blacks and whites mixed. Without fail, the black people will be nodding and say, and the white people will be like, what the heck is he talking about? Look, y'all see this? What's happening right now? They're sitting going, and all of them are like, I don't know what he's talking about. Okay, here's what I'm talking about. Right in front of me, I did not see this incredible resource that Lance had that I didn't have. I was kin to three people, Betty, Travis, and Kevin, my wife and two kids, in the whole state of Tennessee. Lance was kin to three people within 100 yards. Lance is from the underprivileged East Knoxville, right? Well, who is underprivileged in this situation? The guy who ain't got kin to nobody, or the guy who's kin to everybody? When I realized this, I've been working in the African American community off and on for 20 years. This had been happening right in front of my face, and I could not see it because of my mindset. So I tell this anecdote and this story to indicate that communities of color are full of assets and resources and beauty that we're socialized not to see. We are blind because we have been blinded. We are blind because we have been blinded. In order to approach the work of racial justice, we need to change the paradigm of I'm rich, you're poor, I want to help, let's be friends, to an understanding that basically we're dumber than a sack of hammers. Okay? Look at here, we just are. Or another expression, if that doesn't communicate with you, I always heard, you know, I don't know, I'm butt in third base. Okay? We don't. We're dumber than a sack of hammers. Let's admit it and approach it from that angle. So where does the Good Samaritan story comes in? We're all told we're supposed to, I'm used to moving around, so I can't get used to this mic being in one place. We're all told that we're supposed to be like the Good Samaritan. You know, we're supposed to help people out of the ditch. That's our role. What I'm here to say is we're in the ditch. We're the people in the ditch. In the area of race relations, I'm suggesting that the person in the Good Samaritan story with whom we most closely model is the person in the ditch. Okay? We need help. We have been lied to by the structure we live in about who we are. We have been separated from the very community of humanity of which we should be a part, but we're not able to do that because we've been trained to be maintainers of a racist system. So how do we start? And I'd like to mention 4 points, okay? 4, I'd say, directional arrows. Number one is the one about the Good Samaritan. We need to look at others, specifically people of color, for information about their history and experiences. We need help. We need to read stuff. We need to read Bryan Stevenson's Just Mercy. We need to read W.E.B. Du Bois, Ta-Nehisi Coates, Slavery by Another Name, Sundown Towns, a book this thick just about the Sundown Towns. Much of this help will come from people from other races, from other perspectives that we're desperate to have. Yeah, we may go to Cambodia to visit with people who are different from us, or maybe we like to go to Italy, or we could go to Lonsdale. We need to learn about the world, the social structure that we live in, and work to remove these calluses that have been placed over our very souls. Second, we didn't get in the ditch because we were strolling along the road to Jericho talking on our cell phones and we stumbled into the ditch accident. Mm-hmm. That's not how we got in the ditch, okay? We got in the ditch because the robbers put us in the ditch, okay? The robber barons put us in the ditch, okay? It means that the darn robbers knew that they could benefit from our ignorance. And it was them who made us blind. We are blind because we were blinded by people who wanted to keep black and white and brown separated. That should make us angry. That is being done to us, and it's being done to us now. Not just about the brutality that has been rained down on people of color, which we, of course, should be angry about, but also because we have suffered under the same system, we white people. And part of our problem is that we often try to work on issues of racial justice out of a motivation of guilt and shame. But if we're working on racial justice because we want to liberate ourselves, as well as to join with others who are trying to overthrow this racist system, then we're not working out of guilt and shame. We're working out of self-interest and my concern for you. Forget guilt and shame. Don't enter racial justice work if your motivation is guilt and shame. It's guilt-free. Number three, go on a treasure hunt. Well, Lance showed me a treasure that was right in front of my face. There are other treasures. Look up Tanda, T-A-N-D-A, in the Mexican community. You know about Tandas? I didn't. Look up the 8th of August. That's celebrated by African Americans in this region. It sits right in front of us. And there are other treasures out there we don't know about because we're so socialized to see these communities as communities of need, not communities of resources. Finally, the fourth point, we must actively support leaders who are people of color and the organizations they lead. It's not our job to be the Good Samaritan and go in and save Wandsville. I'm just using Wandsville as an example. It is our job to support the leaders of Wandsville, to take a back seat, to support people of color and the organizations that they lead. Make a long-term commitment to that. It took centuries for this racist system to be put in place, and it will take a long time for it to be dismantled. If we're faithful in little ways, eventually we will be asked to be faithful in larger ways with people and organizations and communities of color. But that will take time. If you don't take time, just don't bother with it. If you're going to be motivated by guilt and shame, really, it's better just not bother. But if we want to understand that we have to liberate ourselves, then I suggest that these steps will help us become agents in changing the racist system in which we are part. I was once told that there is an African proverb. It's a little gross. All right, plug your ears. Little by little, the ants ate the elephant. Little by little, all the ants got together, and eventually they ate the elephant. We must understand that we are the ants, and we need to eat like madmen to devour the racist system in which we operate.
One more quote from Reverend Tracy Bachman. He said, "When I call out your white privilege, I sound the alarm of the danger that lurks in not being fully aware of the toxic waters in which we swim. Waters that make you feel as though you're breathing so that you never come up for air. When I call out your white privilege, it's not because I believe you can remove it alone. If that were true, it would be privilege indeed. But it is not. It is a tool of the enemy designed to create an illusion of God divided against God's self. Crafted so that some might assume the idolatrous position of believing somehow that anyone created in the image of God could ever be inherently flawed. When I call it out, white privilege, it is not because I hate you. It is not to separate you. It is to remind you and remind myself that we are one."
So thanks for listening to Out There. Sorry about the sound quality on that. I was using a borrowed recorder trying to figure out which way to face it. That was the main speaker there was Bill Morrow. This was from the Church of the Savior, United Church of Christ in Knoxville, Tennessee. I think 2.5 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago when I was down there. There was also a handout they had with the church bulletin. So they had a bunch of members of the church had done a white privilege curriculum that was put together by black and white leaders in the United Church of Christ denomination. And in the handout, I'm just going to read a few things from this handout. Here's some general behaviors that are helpful for allies. Listen without making judgments. Use appropriate language. And if you're uncertain about what's appropriate, then ask. Speak out when inappropriate language is used or racist ideas are expressed. Don't keep silent. Strive to build relationships with black and brown people. Real relationships break down stereotypes and open people to one another. Oh, I should say that this church was almost entirely white, and it was like a white speaker talking to a mostly white congregation. be willing to be corrected and even criticized without defensiveness and with humility. Show up without thinking that you have to help, which puts you in a superior position. And here's some advice from Reverend Tracy Blackman, who the pastor quoted at the very end. Learn before you leap. It's impossible to act in solidarity with those who are not willing to hear. Don't assume you understand another's pain. Don't compare areas where you have experienced discrimination with racism. The manifestations of oppression differ, and each must be acknowledged in its own right. There is no hierarchy. That's actually from Audre Lorde, I believe. Do your own work for your own sake. Understand the cost of privilege, the toll of racism, and why the dismantling of racism is necessary for your liberation. Be a servant, not a savior. Liberation must be led by those being oppressed. Their pain and their power must be at the center of the work. In anti-racism work, ally is a verb, not a noun. It's only relevant when describing one's current acts of solidarity. Those you stand with are the sole determinant of whether or not you are their ally. Commit to doing white people's work. This includes establishing allyship or solidarity with other white folk who are committed to this work. Establish whiteness accountability cohorts. Continue to show up, even when you'd rather not, even when your presence is misunderstood. Define your lane and commit to writing in it. Don't overpromise and try not to underdeliver. Use your privilege to make space for others to tell their own story, not you telling it. Just because you know another's story doesn't mean ownership has been transferred. And then some specific actions to consider on the sheet that they passed out. Volunteer with voter registration and voter turnout in minority communities. Support the Black Lives Matter movement and other Black-led movements and organizations as they may exist or arise in the future. Support education reforms like restorative justice practices instead of school suspensions, free quality public preschools and extended school days. Volunteer to tutor and or assist young elementary students to read. Study the inequalities in our prisons and work for criminal justice reform. There are many more things, but one thing coming up here in Northampton tomorrow, Thursday, May 3rd, is the monthly Surge meeting, Western Mass Surge, S-U-R-J, showing up for racial justice. It's tomorrow, Thursday, at the Northampton Friends Meeting House at 43 Center Street. There's a potluck at 5:30, and the meeting starts at 6. One of the things that Western Mass Surge has been working on is a reparations campaign, which they're going to have a kickoff event on May 12th. So this meeting tomorrow, I think there'll be some planning about trying to coordinate the May 12th reparations campaign kickoff. Also, I want to say happy belated May Day. Yesterday was May Day. There was a pretty great rally on the steps of City Hall that was organized, I believe, by the Pioneer Valley Workers Center. People spoke up about immigration issues, workers' rights. And there was a call to, I believe, I think Massachusetts still needs to pass the Safe Communities Act to make it safe for all residents. And there's lots of Democratic leaders in the state who have not supported this act. You can probably find more information at the Pioneer Valley Workers Center website, Facebook page, or something. Oh, also, thanks to Kat Berry for calling in and reminding us that the Florence Farmers Market started today in front of Lilly Library, or by Lilly Library. I think it goes till 6 p.m. That's every Wednesday from, I don't know, 2 to 6, something like that. 1 to 6, 2 to 6. The Florence Farmers Market. Maybe I'll go and get some starts for my community garden plot. And what else? Okay, that's most of what comes to my mind right now. When I was in Kentucky for most of the month of April, towards the end of the month, things actually started warming up a little bit. And one night when I went to bed, I heard the whippoorwill. Yeah, can't quite get the volume up high enough on that one. Okay, well, then I'll skip to... I was going to play Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland. Copeland. But there's another group I came across called Appalachian, which is an Appalachian Latin America band. And here's a song they made just called Primavera, Spring. Appalachian, yes, springtime is here, or summertime, it feels like today. Appalachian reflects the name Appalachian reflects the unexpected meeting in Louisville, Kentucky, of Kentucky-raised musicians and masterful Latin emigres from Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Guatemala. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. Thanks for listening to today's show. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. Don't forget to check out the Florence Farmers Market if you're in town. Open till 6. Starts at 2, from 2 to 6 every Wednesday from now until October. Also, this Saturday and every Saturday, Bike Lab. Oh. You want to learn to fix your bike? How to keep it tuned up so it's there for you when you need it? Or maybe you know already, but you just need to borrow a bike-specific tool that you don't have. Well, come to the Bike Lab.
Almost every Saturday since 2004, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. here in Northampton at 12 Northern Avenue.
Come with your bike or your questions.
And your willing attitude.
Spare parts scavenger hunt every weekend.
Vengan al Bike Lab de Northampton, el taller de bicicleta. Aprende a arreglar tu bicicleta y a divertirte.
All repairs guaranteed to the end of the driveway.
Details are online at pedalpeople.coop. That's the Saturday Bike Lab at 12 Northern Avenue, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. They say freedom isn't free, but at the Bike Lab it is.
Hello, everybody. I'm DJ Panic, host of OK Asia, a program with a wide selection of Asian artists. I like to combine genres from rock, pop, hip-hop, Bollywood, and R&B. So please join me every Saturday from 12 to 2 a.m. on Valley Free Radio.
Forbes Library offers free access to computers.
Table of Contents is a weekly music program that assembles an assortment of songs and sounds of many genres, and which may entail literally taking a random collection of musical sources off the shelf and giving them a turn on the table or spin in a CD or tape player. Each week presenting shows which can at times be organized orderly and at other times perhaps do not as much